This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Episode 107 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest today is one of the hottest up-and-coming stars on the competitive scene. She's also one of the most sweetest and humble grinders I've ever met. She is Jadeen Klumperens. Hello.
Hey, Erin. With your little advertisement for the show at on Twitter, I don't think that humble is how I'm these days.
I had to. That was so priceless. Because one of the things I enjoy about you becoming more successful is I feel like I've sort of watched it happen where, you know, when you and I first sort of crossed paths, you had like maybe 100 followers on Twitter, maybe 200. I met you, I think the first time I actually physically met you was GP Philly, was it? I think that might have been
I think so. I think we've met in Philly and Chicago so far.
And each time you were super lovely. And I've literally watched you take off where, you know, you were one of my gal pals at Chicago. And then, bam, you top-8'd it. You top-2'd it, right?
Yep. Final table, that one.
Right. So then I'm watching you, you know, from home going, I was just hanging out with her. Like I send her DMs about Mono Black. And now you're up to 700 followers, I think it is. And
we're pushing 800.
Pushing 800. And then you're going to the Pro Tour and you're playing Patrick Chapin. And it's neat for me to say, I knew you back when. And your star is still rising. And I love watching this all happen.
Yeah, it's been quite the little adventure. You've even overstated how where I was. I think I had 30 Twitter followers in Cincinnati, which was the first time you, because I was like doing well or whatever, and somebody, maybe you, started a hashtag Team Jadeen, which was awesome. And yeah, so that was pretty much where that started.
I remember that. You were playing against Brad Nelson at GP Cincinnati, I think it was.
Yes.
And I remember I watched that match from home and I was sort of riling people up and I was like, we got to root for this girl. She's going to win this thing. And I remember being so mad at Brad Nelson when he beat you. And I was like, boo, we hate him. And yeah. I get very attached to you, Jadeen. You know?
I mean, it's hard to hate Brad, but I certainly did for a couple minutes after that.
The experience I will remember most about Brad, or the most fondly, is I remember being at SCG Philadelphia a year or two ago. This is when my show was first starting out, and I was passing out these Deck Tees stickers that I have, and Brad was sitting with Todd Anderson and BBD, and I gave them all stickers, and Brad looks at the sticker and he goes, "What kind of show do you have exactly?" Because it's the lady with the stockings, and I was like, "Well, it's an interview style show," and he looked at me really, he did this eyebrow raise, and he's like, "I don't know if I want to be on a show like this," and he shows me the sticker and I was like, what's the big deal? Okay. And then come to find out that he's sort of a joker and he might have been trolling me, but I'll never forget him looking at me going, what kind of show do you have exactly? So
that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. And then I remember I interacted with him on Twitter once or twice. I wanted him on the show, and again he was doing that trolling where I was just asking him some very basic questions, like he agreed to come on the show, or he said he was interested, and I was like, great, when are you free? And he's like, I don't like these questions. And I'm like, and I thought he was serious. And I'm like, what is your deal? Like, I'm just trying to schedule with you. And then people were like, oh, that's so Brad. You know, he's just kidding. And I totally took it the wrong way. And I was like, you're a jerk. And then I muted him. And yeah, I don't really play that. So. So I guess I just don't get his style of humor. But
right.
But we are here to talk about you today, Ms. Klumperens, because you are on the fast track. And I know I am dying to know more about you. My listeners are dying to know more about you. And I'm hoping that we can give them something to listen to. So.
Absolutely.
Okay, so first up, I have to get these announcements out of the way first, because I've been a busy little bee lately. First and foremost, folks, I have Deck Tees playmats. They are official, and they are here, and they look amazing. They are $20 a piece if you are interested. Shipping and handling is $6 if you live in the USA. If you live in Canada or outside of the US, it's between $20 to $25 for shipping. If you'd like your playmat autographed, it's $1. However, I have been considering waiving that fee for my international friends because you're already paying enough for the mat. I don't think you should pay a dollar more. So if you are interested in the playmat, they are a limited time only offer. And you can email me at thedecktees@gmail.com, which is my second announcement. I have an easier email. I received some feedback that people didn't know what an estrus was. They didn't know what an elitist jerks was. So now there is an email solely for the show. So thedecktees@gmail.com. If you have feedback, criticism, or you're interested in a mat, you can reach me there. And with that out of the way, let's talk about you. So you were at the Pro Tour. And I know, I think I speak for some people when I say that I will never make it to the Pro Tour. And I'm okay with that. But I'm so curious as to what happens behind the scenes. Like, I want the dirt. So you qualified for the Pro Tour from at Cincinnati or Chicago?
Chicago.
Okay. And how did it feel to know that you were going to the Pro Tour?
I actually don't think I have words for it, which is a little surprising because I do love words. They're pretty fantastic, but just, it was one of the best feelings of my life, top eighting Chicago, knowing I was finally going to get to play on a pro tour. And, the tournament itself, you know, you have these things in life, you build them up and then you get there and there's like, there's just no way anything could reach all those expectations. Well, the Pro Tour did. It actually exceeded them, and it's really just unbelievable how amazing the whole thing was.
Mm-hmm. So when you found out that you were going, now, so the invite, it's just the invite. Like, you still have to pay the airfare and the hotel, correct?
Hotel, yes. A top eight of a Grand Prix comes with a plane ticket as well.
Oh, nice, because I always wondered about that.
Yeah, Wizards sent me the invoice. I don't know if it was like a, hey, here's how much you're costing us kind of thing. They spent like $1,000 on my plane ticket, so I'm pretty happy that I didn't have to pay for that.
Did you go on Frontier?
No.
Okay, because I remember when I went to the Community Cup, I got stuck on a Frontier flight, and I'd never flown with Frontier before. And I was, I mean, mind you, they paid for my flights. I couldn't be too picky. But Frontier, they charge you just to have a carry-on.
I think that's most airlines these days, which is
really
depressing, yeah.
Okay, because I was flying. I mean, I flew earlier this year, and I don't recall that being a thing. But so I remember being really cocky and very happy. Like, I was going to the airport, and I was like, oh, my flight was paid for by Wizards. And then I go up to the little booth, and they're like, that'll be $36 for your carry-on. And I'm like, what? And I remember being like so, you know, put out for the first couple of minutes. Like, I can't believe they're making me pay for my carry-on. This is a travesty. And
oh, man. Yeah, I went to great lengths. Oh, for a carry-on they made you pay?
That
is,
yeah,
absolutely insane. I thought I was thinking checked bag. Yeah, no. I've never heard of having to pay for a carry-on.
Right? So there was this little part of me that was like, thanks, Wizards, made me pay for my bags. I was all indignant for a little while. So they paid for the plane ticket. That's awesome. And when did you start actually preparing for this thing?
That's a good question. I tested with a group of New York, mostly people, Jared Betcher, Andy Boswell, James Aspen is his Facebook name, Charles Hinkle, Adam Barnello, and Miguel Gattaca. Mm-hmm. And so we met around Jared's house in New York for like, I think we started like 3 weeks before the Pro Tour, and then we all went to Hawaii about a week before.
Now, how did you decide what team to test with? Like, did you receive offers or did you have to pursue them?
Well, I went on this like trip of magic where I played an open in Syracuse and then an open in DC and then the Invitational, the SCG Invitational in Somerset, New Jersey. And I'm out of Michigan, so this was a pretty big commitment. And I like relocated to Connecticut for the 3 weeks it would take. And one of the like sub goals of the trip was to try and do some networking and find a team to play on. And then Jared messaged me on Facebook after DC and was like, hey, do you want to test with me and some other people? I'm like, yes, absolutely, yes. I was basically, any team I was going to say yes to, and this was way better than I could have imagined. It worked out really well.
Mm-hmm. So you met up with your team. What exactly was your process like? So how much time did you actually spend testing?
Pretty much a lot.
Okay.
I mean, we were in Hawaii for a week of pretty much straight testing, just wake up, play for a few hours, get some food, play for some more hours, maybe eat again, play until you have to go to sleep. It's pretty much all we were doing. And it was like that for a few days in New York as well. We probably put in like 10 or 11 days of testing.
Mm-hmm. And how did you handle that? Like, were you fine with that grind?
Oh, it was awesome. Grinding is what I do. I don't know any other way to really prepare for things. So I was thrilled. It's pretty much all I ever wanted.
So you said you got there a little bit early, and then the day of the pro tour, so you get to the venue, and then do you guys have a player meeting? Like, are there swag bags? Like, let me in on the dirt. What happened?
So on Thursday, the day before the event, there's registration from like 4 to 8 or something. You go in there, you give them your ID, you know, they make sure you are who you say you are and that you get to play there. And then you go and collect all your swag. You get sleeves for your standard deck. You get a deck box, one of these new Ultra Pro things with Khans of Tarkir, the Khans on them, I believe. Mine has Narset. So you get that. You get a T-shirt, one of the Pro Tour T-shirts you may have seen at events. People love to wear them. They're pretty cool. I could be happier, but they're pretty okay. what else was there in the... that everything? You also get sleeves for every round of the draft, or not every round of the draft, but both of the drafts for your draft decks while you're there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you get a free draft set when you register, and they give you a free draft set on Saturday and Sunday, so you can do tons of drafting on Wizards Dimes during the Pro Tour.
Nice. What was it like actually being on the stage? Like, you know, you have the people around you with the little iPads who are keeping track of your cards, you have the lights, you have the cameras, you know, what was that like?
I mean, I got to be in the feature match area for one round in the round 3 of the tournament against Chapin. We weren't on camera, so like I didn't notice. I think we ended up very little bit on camera towards the end of our match. But overall, I mean, I didn't notice it. That feature match area is certainly much brighter. Like the lights are just like insane there, and they aren't normally at like the Grand Prix feature match area or Star City feature matches. But I mean, I didn't really notice it anymore once we got into the game.
What was it like playing Chapin?
That was my second time playing Chapin, actually. I played him and beat him in Cincinnati in the Mono Black Mirror.
Wow.
That was the match that we played at the Pro Tour was easily one of my like all-time 5 best matches of Magic. I ended up losing, but it was like it felt like the game was almost like all in our heads where I was just trying to bluff him out of playing a Creator's Clause that I knew he had to have in his hand and was not able to successfully do it for long enough. And there was no way that I was going to be able to against somebody of Chapin's skill level.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other opponents that you have that feeling about? You said like your top 5?
My top 5 matches? I don't actually have them all in New York. I don't think the others like really happened recently, but I mean, it's just one of those things where if I was going to rank them, this would have to make the top 5.
Sure, sure. And how do you feel about your performance overall?
I was pretty happy. I wasn't sure how I was going to do going into it, but like 4 or 5 rounds in, I really just finally felt like, okay, I do belong here. This is, you know, like a level of the game that I'm able to perform at, and let's just see how it goes. Mm-hmm. I ended up going 10-6. 4 of my 6 losses were to players currently ranked in the top 25, and then another one was former Player of the Year Brad Nelson.
Again?
Yeah, he got me again.
Oh, we hate him. Was there anything that surprised you about the experience, like that you went into it expecting something and it ended up being nothing like you thought it would be?
Not really. It's much less grinding than like Grand Prix just because you play less Magic in a day. The language barriers weren't as bad as I thought they would be going in. You know, you have a tournament from people from tons of countries all over the place. And I played, you know, a couple players who we didn't speak the same language, but it was not an insurmountable problem. And it was actually pretty much like any other match of Magic I've ever played, except I didn't feel, you know, these pesky social obligations, like I'm supposed to make small talk with my opponent. So that was actually kind of nice.
I love that, the peskiness if I have to actually talk to my opponent.
I mean, on Magic Online, you can just not look at the chat screen, just ignore everything they're saying, and just, you know, click some buttons and beat them that way. Mm-hmm. It's much simpler.
Yeah. What did you take away from the Pro Tour experience?
Well, the important thing that I did not take away is an invite to the next one. And I actually, having played on it and knowing just how awesome it is, want it probably more than I did before the first one. So I took away a pretty renewed fire, and I really want to get back.
Mm. That's one of the things I love about you is for as long as I've known you, you want this more than anybody. Like, I've never really met anybody with that desire. I mean, people, I've met people who say they want it, but even just being around you, like physically, I can tell how bad you want this. And that's so interesting.
You like sent that topic to me in your show notes this morning and I like saw it and it's like, it's just always so flabbergasting, like when somebody who, you know, you kind of know, don't talk to that much. And it's just like, one of my high school teachers did it too. And like her recommendation letter for me just like hits on something that you like put at like a core tenet of your being. So like, I was really happy to see that people can tell how important this is to me and like how passionate I am about trying to compete and be the best that I can be. And it's not something that I really realized I was showing so well, but, yeah, I mean, I definitely, it's very important to me.
And what is it that fuels this passion? Is it just that you want to be the best or is there more to it?
That's pretty much it. I mean, like, I haven't spent too much time trying to dissect why I want it so bad. I just know that I do and I'm doing what I can. I can be very egalitarian, utilitarian. I don't remember the exact word, something where like it's not actually helping me in getting to my goals to figure out why they are my goals. And I would rather just spend that time getting there.
Because you've given up a little bit to do this. Like you quit your job, right?
I mean, sure. I no longer deliver pizzas for Pizza Hut.
I'm just saying, it's, you know, you're giving up some of your security and your stability for this.
Yeah, I have definitely, it's quite the transition when, all your money starts coming in the form of checks made payable to you from tournament winnings. We hit the point a couple months ago, actually, where all of the money in my bank accounts were like directly attributable to recent tournament winnings. And it was like, so if I hadn't been winning at Magic, I would have no money right now.
That's got to be kind of scary, you know, to think about that where, you know, God forbid you don't do well at tournaments. So let's say you have a bad patch and, you know, your livelihood depends on that. Like, have you thought about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they loved me at Pizza Hut, so I just walked right back in.
That could be good for your tips, though, you know, like, you know, I mean, wouldn't that be a great service if you could get like pro players to deliver your pizza? I mean,
you know, that's always like the funny thing when I was like delivering pizzas and they would be to a hotel or a place where, you know, it's not like a constant residence. They would like have like a last name that's like some famous Magic player or something, like, say, Chapin. We were talking about him earlier, and I don't think that ever came up, but there's been a couple where I've like go to the hotel room and just be like, if this is Patrick Chapin, I'm going to lose my mind. Spoiler, it was never a Magic player.
I'm just imagining you going to the door with like one hand like covering your face, like, hi, this pizza is for Mr. Duke, Reed Duke, and he's like, why can't I see your face? And you're like, I here's your pizza, thanks. And you know, wait a minute, didn't I play you at a no, here you go, bye. And he closes the door and he's like, I think we played her at an open. Mortified. That would be an awesome story, I think. I mean, I just wish there was a service where pro players delivered pizzas, because I would probably answer the door in a towel more often. Like, hey, Paolo. So you grew up in Mattawan, Michigan.
I did.
Okay. And what was your childhood like? Like, what was it like growing up in Mattawan?
So Mattawan is one of those altogether too forgettable towns that is mainly memorized or remembered in high school yearbooks by the exit off the highway. And we just take all too much pride in, you know, high school auditoriums or whatever. Like, yeah, exit 66. Never forget. Well, maybe we got lucky with 66 and we'll actually never forget because there's only one number there. But, you know, it's like a small town, not much trouble, pretty well-to-do, the kind of place. My parents moved here because the school system was good. So it's got that reputation. So you get, you know, like slightly better off families in the end because they want to go and they can afford to live where their children are going to get a better education. And that kind of affects snowballs until where you actually end up with a better education. But yeah, it's, you know, just a nice little small town.
Sounds like you grew up pretty comfortably.
Yeah, that's probably fairly accurate. I mean, like, not like, you know, solidly middle class, maybe the upper end of middle class.
Mm-hmm. You're an only child?
I am not. I am the eldest of three. I have both a younger brother and a younger sister.
Wow. Do you get along with your siblings?
These days I do. My brother is like a year and 3/4 younger than me, so there was some friction there growing up at times. My sister, on the other hand, is 7 years younger than me, and it's kind of hard to hate somebody who is that much younger than you. Mm-hmm. You just love them because they're your sibling and they barely speak English or whatever.
Mm-hmm. What did your parents do for a living back then?
My dad is working with, or back then it would have been Pfizer, he's in computer tech, he's in computers.
The big drug company?
Yeah, Pfizer.
Wow.
Drug company. Yeah, Kalamazoo, which is like the big city near Mattawan, is one of their, bigger campuses as far as that goes. And he's like a project manager for whatever. He does that. My mom's a court recorder.
Very nice. Very nice. And what were you like? Like, what were your school years like?
I was very quiet, mm-hmm. socially awkward to a fault. I made all of my friends through Magic's younger sibling, Yu-Gi-Oh!
Mm.
I'm one of those kids.
It's funny because I actually gave up Magic to play Pokemon. I did it backwards.
I don't know why you would do that.
Well, I did it because, so at that age, I was still in my teens. And I like to say that at that age, I really wasn't playing Magic. And I use the air quotes. You know, I was playing in my friends' basements. Mm-hmm. You know, we really didn't have any local card shops that would have tournaments. So if we wanted to play in a tournament, we had to pool our babysitting money together, find the one teenager who could drive and go to the store an hour out to play. But it was mostly because, you know, Pokemon was the new thing and all the stores were running Pokemon events. And you could also go to Toys R Us and play every Saturday morning in the Pokemon League, and you'd get your little passport book with your pins, and it was just a matter of, you know, moving on to the game that I knew I'd actually be able to play, and Pokemon happened to be it, so.
Sure, yeah, and I mean, I've never actually played Pokemon. I make fun of it mostly because it's the hip thing to do, but, I mean, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! As a game was really good. I really liked a lot of things of it more than I like certain things in Magic or whatever, and ended up quitting that game several years down the road just because there was no reward, I felt, in trying to be a competitive player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, doesn't have cash prizes, and, like, why? Mm-hmm. Why am I even playing at that point? The dream is just not there.
Sure, sure. So how did you discover Magic?
Well, I went to college at some point.
You did?
I did. That is a thing that I did.
I keep thinking of the pros I've had on my show that have been like, fuck college.
I haven't finished college, but I did
at
some point. I got a full ride out of high school to Penn State, the State College of Pennsylvania.
Wow.
So that was like 8 hours away. And there wasn't a Yu-Gi-Oh! Scene at Penn State in the brief amount of research I did. So I was like, the only way I know how to make friends is through card games. And they had a Magic club, so I was like, close enough. Let's run it. So I started playing Magic there.
And that's where you met all your friends?
Yes, that is how I survived college.
And you went to school with a Norbert from Twitter, John Richmond?
Yeah, John Richmond. I sure did.
Okay.
Back in the day.
What was he like?
Very similar to now. I think one of the favorite things back then that we used to say is that John is the guy to go to if you want to know how the rules should work.
Okay.
You get to great. What was the story? Something about how having two instances of double strike should be quadruple strike.
Oh my.
Yeah, that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah. Were there any other geek hobbies that you got into while you were there?
I played a lot of League of Legends.
Okay.
A lot of League of Legends for a few years there and a few years after leaving there. I don't play as much anymore, but that was fun. I flirted with a few different MMOs, a little bit of WoW, a little bit of some Final Fantasy MMO, the Star Wars MMOs for a little bit, but I have a curse where I tend to quit playing an MMO right before I would unlock my mount.
Oh.
So I don't get very far.
Now, when you played WoW, were you Alliance or Horde?
I did both, but I preferred the Alliance, I think.
Jadine Elizabeth Glomparents, we cannot be friends. Alliance?
Yeah, you know, they're the good guys. They're like the knights in shining armor, and they rescue things, and they're not just like barbarians with a club.
Hey now, I was a Tauren druid, okay?
So you had a club?
No, I had horns. I turned into a bear or a kitty or a tree.
Okay.
I was actually a boomkin for a while, so I was the big chicken. Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
Dead to me, madam. Dead to me. So now, what led you to becoming more competitive in Magic? I remember you said, you know, you sound like you were always competitive, because you had made a comment about Yu-Gi-Oh! Where you said there was no dream and there was no real motivation for you to keep playing.
Yeah.
So that's something you look for in a game?
Yeah, I mean, I was competitive in Yu-Gi-Oh! In the sense that, you know, we'd travel 2 hours to the regionals or whatever, whatever the tournaments were in Yu-Gi-Oh! Back then. And then switched to Magic, and like the local group there, I basically spent like 2 years basically just drafting. I looked at it as Magic was my casual game that I was playing to make friends at college, and then I'd go home in the summer and play Yu-Gi-Oh! Competitively with my friends. So there was like 2 or 3 years where like being competitive in Magic just wasn't that big of a deal to me, because I was trying to be competitive in Yu-Gi-Oh! Instead, which, by the way, I was never very good at Yu-Gi-Oh! And then, you know, like quit Yu-Gi-Oh!, quit Magic, quit Yu-Gi-Oh! Again, quit Magic again. There's a lot of quitting involved. And at some point, I finally was like, I guess I'm going to play this Magic game instead, if I'm going to put all this time into it. Mm-hmm. So I was always aware of the competitive side of the game. I wasn't one of those players who, you know, picks it up, plays casually, and then a couple of years down the road discovers that, you know, there's these local tournaments and whatever. I knew about the competitive scene long before I like played my first game.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how to just play casually? Like, let's say your local game store was just having a fun event. Like, do you go to game days? Do you go to pre-releases? Or do you just do the competitive stuff?
I once saw somebody on Twitter, and I can't remember who, say that they have solved the problem of the tension at pre-releases between being casual and being competitive, mm-hmm. where pre-releases are, like, designed for the casual player. And that was just by not going, because mm-hmm. it's not for the competitive player. And I'm a huge fan of that philosophy. I do actually still go to pre-releases, but they're one of my least favorite events, just because I feel like if I'm trying to win really hard, I'm ruining everybody else's fun. But if I'm trying to have fun, that's just having fun for fun's sake just isn't something I understand.
Interesting.
I have fun, like, as a side effect of trying to win. So okay. It's difficult for me to, yeah, so no, I tend to skip the more casual events is the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, because I feel like I need to have events where I don't have to be competitive, because I feel like when I look at every event that way, that leads to my tilting, and I feel like it's nice to have those down times where you can just sort of, you know, throw up your hands and just go wee, and you know, you're not really there to be, you know, capital letters Jadine Klumperens. You can just have fun. And
yeah. And I definitely feel like that, too. It's just that my outlet for having fun doesn't involve Magic.
Okay. Interesting. So what have your experiences been as a competitive player? Like, what were your first couple events like?
My first couple events... I mean, it's like a blur back in the early days between Magic events and Yu-Gi-Oh! Events. I remember right when I started playing Magic, I wasn't... Like, I didn't have any cards, and I still don't really have any cards, but there was an in-between time in which I had cards. So I would mostly try to aim for, like, limited PTQs or other limited events, because that was, you know, what I could play. So I think most of my early events were, like, pre-releases, back when pre-releases were huge, and you got to go to, like, cities, like, a ways away and get, like, good prize support before the whole push to have them at local stores. So we did a few of those as a club, and then early limited PTQs would have been my first events that we just kind of, you know, it was like about the camaraderie and the road trip and going to an event and everybody doing poorly and leaving and getting good food or whatever and singing sweet Disney songs the whole trip. Good times.
Now, you mentioned the, you know, the aspect of fun. You know, do you still enjoy the social aspect as well?
It's kind of like weird at this point, because I am leaving like my local area and my local players a lot and going on like insane trips that most of them don't do. So I don't like have the constant group that I travel with as much. Like, I made that 3 week or like almost a month trip out east, and I didn't take anybody with me. So it was like a bunch of 10-hour drives where I'm the only person in the car. And just things that are basically completely miserable to do and you wouldn't want to do if you were a sane person at all. But I'm pretty sure competitive Magic necessitates not being completely sane, so we do it anyway. So I do value the social aspect, but at the same time, like, I focus much worse when I'm talking to people at a tournament. I don't know if anybody's tried to talk to me during tournaments, but I spend most of my time just listening to music between rounds and not really socializing, because that's how I stay focused and stay in the game. Mm-hmm. So yes, like, the being social is certainly still important, but I'm not very good at it, and it's getting harder.
Mm-hmm. So you would be fine going to an event where you didn't necessarily know anybody and you didn't have anybody to hang out with in between rounds. You'd be okay with that.
Not only would I be okay with it, I've done it, and it's happening mm-hmm. fairly often still these days.
And would you say you prefer it now?
I wouldn't say that I prefer it, but it's very close. It's not, like, much worse than having people I know.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to ask you, what have your experiences been as a competitive player who happens to be a woman?
That's, like, reasonably difficult for me to answer, just because there hasn't been much of it. Mm-hmm. I haven't really noticed too many terrible things happening because I'm a girl.
Have there been good things?
I haven't noticed too much of that either, although, I mean, I generally assume that some of my notoriety or fame, that I'm getting it a little faster than I would if I was a guy mm-hmm. at this point. There was certainly a much bigger buzz about me top two-ing Chicago than could have possibly been made if I was a guy, seeing as there was a story in there.
And what do you think about that? Like, are you okay with that, or does that make you a little uncomfortable?
I'm okay with it. I don't think it should matter at all, so I try not to dwell on it. I think there was a bit in the feature match, like the text version of the finals, where they're like, so would you be the first woman to win a GP if you win this? And then, like, the narrative text inserted, it was like, she doesn't look like she cares much, she just wants to win for other reasons. And that's, you know, pretty accurate, just playing the best I can and letting everything else not exist so much.
Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on the state of things with regards to women in the community? Because obviously you've been traveling to a lot of different events, and you get to see a lot of different angles of the game. Like, would you agree that we are, you know, that we are in a weird place with that, or there could stand to be more women, or, you know, do you think that the events could stand to be more welcoming? Like, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I don't know what the problem is, but there mm-hmm. certainly is one. Mm-hmm. Like, at the Pro Tour, there was three of us, I believe, registered in the event, three women, and, like, there's just no reason for that, like, that I can possibly even begin to comprehend why mm-hmm. it would be like that. So, something's wrong. I'm not the person who has the answers, but hopefully someday we figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that your success might inspire more women to play? Like, is that something you hope for?
I do hope for it. I've mm-hmm. certainly had some people tell me that, you know, they root for me because of those reasons, that, you know, they are watching me at home with their boyfriend, or just watching me and, like, really rooting for me. I've got that a lot, and that just means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, not something I expected when I started doing well, but it's certainly, you know, when I'm starting to despair and, like, wonder if this is all worth it, I'm 8 hours into a 10-hour drive going to a tournament, and I'm just thinking that I'm the stupidest person on the planet. I'm just, like, sometimes thinking of things like that, and how much it seems to matter to other people really helps me remember that there's reasons for why I do this.
Mm-hmm. Are you hard on yourself?
I am exceedingly hard on myself.
Yeah. I know you're mentioning some of your thoughts while you're on those long drives.
Yeah, I am. I'm pretty hard on myself, much harder than I should be. I'm actually trying to work on it.
Yeah.
But that is, like, one of the ways you get better, just by, you know, not accepting mistakes. Like, I try not to. It gets into, like, a fuzzy area for me, like, saying, oh, it's okay that you made this mistake, you were tired, or you were hungry or something. But eventually, if you keep allowing yourself to make mistakes for reasons, you're always going to have a reason. And at some point, at least for me, I found that I just have to, like, this wasn't okay. You play better than this, you are better than this, and you need to start actually doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to being a woman who plays Magic, was there ever a point where you felt like you were wearing what I call the mantle, where you felt like you had to be good for all women, and if you weren't good, then people would think, oh, this is the reason women don't play Magic, and like, you had to represent us?
There was a little bit, like, after Cincinnati, or when people started to know me, or whatever, where I don't know if you've heard of that terrible phrase, like the girlfriend bracket,
yes,
where you're dropped from the event or whatever. Yeah, that's, like, absolutely awful. And, like, anytime I'd come even close to like entering it, I'd just like start feeling awful. Like, this isn't okay. People know that I'm like decent at the game, and like ending up down there is like, I don't know, I felt really bad about that possibility and tried really hard to avoid it.
Yeah, my friend Jess came up with that phrase, the mantle, because I remember when I came back to Magic, I came back around Innistrad, and I felt that pressure two times over. Like, I felt like if I was bad, then people were going to look at me and be like, oh, we knew girls are bad at Magic, or we knew, you know, this is the reason they don't come to events. And, you know, I felt like I was doing every woman a disservice by being bad or by making a misplay. And then I felt it as a trans woman, where I was like, great, now I've got to represent for them too, and, you know, I have to be good for everybody. And it was very freeing when I finally learned to take the mantle off, but I remember feeling that pressure for a while.
It can definitely be a lot to bear, and it's just not productive, I think, to feel like that, to worry so much about that. Not that it's easy to avoid doing all the time, but it's not really helping anybody.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a little part of me, just to show you how insidious the mantle can be, you know, there was also a part of me that started to feel bad when I did well too, because I was like, oh great, now they're gonna expect every woman to do well, and I've just made it harder for all these girls who maybe aren't so good at the game, and fuck, and yeah. I felt all the feelings, right? I felt guilt either way.
That's a pretty good example of just, like, insane pressure. Like, obviously, those two, like, ideas can't coexist, but they do somehow, and it just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So how have you adjusted to the fame that comes along with this? Because, like I said, your following has blown up. A lot of eyes are on you. A lot of people like you and support you. Are you getting recognized at events? Like, what's that like?
Yeah, it's really, really weird. So there was that open in New Jersey 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. that the first open of the format that I top aided with Jeskai. I guess we're calling it Jeskai Wins now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first, you know, people had seen of that deck, me and Kevin Jones. And then the next weekend, I was playing a local 5K an hour north of me in Michigan. And, like, I felt like the hometown hero almost. Like, people were just all, like, they were like, oh, you're here. I can't believe you're here. You're in New Jersey last weekend. Like, are you from around here? And I'd be like, yeah, actually. I live basically an hour south of here. And, like, a bunch of people already knew that and were just, like, congratulating me. And, like, other people were just super surprised. I signed a few playmats that day.
Wow.
Signing playmats is a great feeling, by the way. I had to decide how I wanted to sign my name. I worked on it like an hour in class one day.
You practiced your autograph?
Yes. No shame.
Nice.
It's nice being recognized or people knowing who you are. And there's certainly bad things too, like that terrible Facebook message that went on Twitter mm-hmm. a few weeks ago or whatever after Edison. And I think that's really the only bad experience I've had so far.
Mm-hmm. How did you deal with that? Because, I mean, you actually had sent me the message first, mm-hmm. and I had asked you if I could make it public because it was terrible, and I wanted people to see how terrible it was, and you said yes. I felt bad, and it wasn't even me. I mean, what was it like when you saw that? Like, how did you deal with that?
I was, like on my computer laughing and, like, talking with my boyfriend, and then I saw the message, and I got really quiet. And he's like, wait, what happened? So I just, like, wordlessly pulled him over, had him look at it, and then I just cried for a while. Like, it was really sad. We went on a walk. While I gave it to you, we went on a walk and then came back, and just all the Twitter support, like, really helped me. Like, I just, like, was just so, it came out of left field that somebody would do that, and it just was, like, trying to figure out what I did to make it happen, which is, like, obviously insane.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just can't really always have rational responses to these, like, crazy emotional things.
Yeah, I was so blown away by that, but I was more blown away by the support and just seeing all of the people like William Jensen and people chiming in to say how terrible that is and how great you are. And, you know, that's kind of why I wanted to put it out there, was I wanted to bury that negativity in whatever positivity I could find. And I think we did a pretty good job of that. So
yeah, absolutely. The support was really cool. It was really awesome.
Do you read up on, like, I mean, do you watch the chats? Do you watch your footage of when you're on camera? Do you read what people might say about you? Or
I do. Way, way, way more than I should, to the point where my boyfriend has told me that I am not allowed to read YouTube comments anymore.
Oh, no.
Thankfully, I haven't ever found a place where I can like read the Twitch chat. I don't even want to begin what the Twitch chat would look like.
Mm-hmm.
But that's dead and gone afterwards, as far as I know, and I don't want to believe otherwise. But yeah, I definitely have, you know, watched most of my feature matches, read the comments. It's actually like when I started in Cincinnati and Chicago, I played lands in front of spells because that's how I played.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read a lot of comments on the YouTube videos that people hate that, so I stopped.
And then you did it again at the Pro Tour, didn't you?
I did. I finally came to my senses. It was like, maybe I shouldn't let people on YouTube tell me how to play my cards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So another reason that I root so hard for you, and we did discuss this before, and you said you were fine talking about this, is you are also a trans lady like me.
Yep.
What has your journey been like? Like, how did you get here?
Well, I mean, that's one of the overarching struggle of my life, it's probably fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up transitioning within like the last year, really.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati was actually my first Magic tournament since transitioning, like with my name and everything. So that was like really cool that like I started doing well like right afterwards, and it's honestly not really a coincidence. I mean, I'm sure you know, just feeling so much better, so much like way off of my mental processes, that's when I started to actually do well in Magic really isn't a surprise to me.
Mm-hmm. I did, when I was researching you, I did find a couple of videos of you back when you identified back then, and you seemed like you were pretty good then too.
I think there is one feature match from before that I've ever found. I try not to watch it, but I was like okay, I guess, but nothing special in any way. I mean, I would consider myself to be something special now, but that's because I am a huge egoist.
Do you think that you also view yourself in a better light now because you're happier with who you are and you're closer to who you think you are?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's like one of the great benefits of transitioning is just, you know, getting to be yourself out in the world and have other people be like, oh yeah, cool. I feel like people actually know you instead of a mask.
Mm-hmm. When did you first realize or have an idea that you might be different or might be trans?
I first had the word transgender, I think, in my last year of high school or my first year of college.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just like having the word to go along with feelings that I'd been probably feeling since beginning of high school, probably earlier, but like, you know, that's about the time period when I started realizing something was going on, something was different.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably safe to say that the whole thing was like why I didn't finish college after getting a full ride to Penn State, why I ended up after 3 years at Penn State, I lost my scholarship and went back to Michigan. And like this whole thing was, it took me a long time to figure it all out, but we're here now. It's mm-hmm. essentially the gist of it.
Mm-hmm. And how did your family deal with the news?
Well, in the end, it was very good. Like there were some, you know, heated moments or whatever, but we got through it and everybody's really supportive.
Mm-hmm. What do they think of you being a pro Magic player and being on the grind?
That.
Really?
Oh, God, the number of fights I've had with my dad about how playing cards is a waste of time and how I could be doing so much for the world or whatever.
Even now, even after the Pro Tour, they still feel that way?
We haven't talked about it much since then. I think finally he's come to the conclusion that it doesn't matter what he says and I'm going to do this anyway. So
okay.
He hasn't done much. But yeah, now that I actually have money coming in, it's probably harder to argue with it.
Yeah, that seems to be a pattern with several of my guests is the parents don't like it until they see them on camera or until they see some money coming in and then they kind of relax a little bit and then they might even change their mind.
Yeah. That's probably pretty reasonable. I don't think my parents have ever watched me on camera. I've never, like, passed it along to them. Maybe I should.
Just sit on the couch and make a bowl of popcorn and be like, all right, we're going to watch a movie. Come on. And you're on screen. Like, that's got to be a weird feeling.
I watch my sister's ice skating videos, so it's only fair, right?
Now, what would you be doing if you weren't playing Magic? Because you do have a bit of a college education behind you, and you know, you said your dad made the comment that you could be like, you know, changing the world or something. What would that include?
Probably the sciences.
Yeah.
My full ride was for like any science degree at Penn State. I am pretty smart. I think I have no qualms in saying that. I've said more at other times. a little more humble on your interview here. So I'd probably, you know, be off in, getting my doctorate somewhere or something. I was a chemistry major at Penn State. When I finally graduate, probably next semester, it'll be a math degree.
Wow. Do you use any of those skills in magic?
Not really, no. I mean, just like thinking about how to think is helpful, and I guess I'm probably better at thinking than I would be without like college or something, but like I don't use any math and magic, not even like any hand statistics or anything. Like, it doesn't help me at all to like know that there's a, if I keep this hand, I have a 46% chance of drawing the land I need or something. Like, that's not useful to me in any way while I'm actually playing, so I try not to think about it.
Interesting.
I play much more on like feel and intuition than anything else, which is a weird approach for somebody, I think, with my academic background, but it's what has worked for me.
Mm-hmm. So, Jadine, where do you see yourself in the next few years? Like, what are your ultimate goals?
I want to be as good at magic as I can be. There were times when I let my goals be defined in, I want to play on the Pro Tour, or I want to win a Pro Tour, win a Grand Prix, and I let the results define my goals, but that's just not really tenable. There's enough variance in magic that it's really hard to need a specific result to feel good about yourself. So eventually I came to the conclusion that all I really want to do is play magic as well as I can, and then assume that the results will fall in their place at that point. I mean, unless I'm actually the unluckiest person on the planet, which I do not hold to be true. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, now I'm just trying to play the best I can, and I want to keep improving. And I constantly notice huge flaws in my game that I can work on, that I need to learn more things I can do to prepare, more things I can do while playing. And I can't even imagine a time when I don't think I can get better at magic.
Mm-hmm. So do you think there will ever be a time where you can say, I did good today, and not have anything to pick at or bring up?
I do that all the time, actually. Like, I'm capable of recognizing where I am at like, my current play level, mm-hmm. and not expecting myself to have done better than I'm capable of. If I go through a tournament and be like, okay, here's a bunch of mistakes I made, but in order to reliably not make those mistakes, I just need to get better. Mm-hmm. And I really played within my level, and I didn't play below the level I think I'm at, then I'm like okay with the day. Because like during a tournament, I don't feel like it's reasonable to expect yourself to do better than you do in practice. So as long as I'm not making huge mistakes that I don't make normally, I'm not letting the pressure get to me, I'm not letting my tournament emotions get to me, and I'm still playing at that same consistent level, it doesn't matter so much to me that the level isn't as high as I would want it to be, because it'll get there if I just keep playing.
Mm-hmm. Since you brought it up, what are some of the things you need to work on?
Brad Nelson read me like a book in our last match. I did some really terrible sideboarding against Chapin that cost me the match, but were just things I hadn't thought about. If you want to hear a great story of me playing below my level, in the second Pro Tour draft, I'm in Teamer, and I played a High Spire Mantis in my second draft deck. Mm-hmm. High Spire Mantis is 2, a red and a white for a 3/3 flying trampler. If we're not familiar with the name Teamer yet, that would be red, green, and blue. So white is not in any of those colors. And so I didn't have like any crazy fixing. I wasn't a 4-color deck. I just thought High Spire Mantis was red and blue. So this is in the Pro Tour, day 2 of the Pro Tour. I had to win 4 matches on day 1 to get to a point where I can highly take a card in my third pack to put in my deck to make it actively worse in the sense that it's uncastable and doesn't add mana.
Oh, man. Oh, I wish you were in a feature match. That would have been hilarious.
The worst part is I didn't figure it out until I drew it game 2. And I didn't even figure it out when I drew it. I figured it out when I tapped 4 mana and was about to cast it. And then I looked at it and was like, I can't cast this card. Untap my mana, pass the turn. He just looked at me and I was like, what? What do you want?
I was testing you.
It's a bluff.
Oh, that makes me feel so much better about myself now.
Yeah. it was actually so bad that I wasn't even upset about it. I was like, I can't be mad about this. I'm just laughing. I can't even imagine.
Man.
So yeah, so that would be my goal for the next book. Only register spells in draft decks that I can cast.
Seems doable.
If you had asked me before this one, I would have said it was doable for this one too, but I guess I was wrong.
Oh, that is going to be something I'm going to be obsessed with. Like, you know, when you get to the next pro tour, you know, they have those people standing over you with the cards. I'm going to be looking at your hand and just be like, are these her colors? Are these her colors?
Can she cast all her cards? Can she do it again? If this enters the lexicon as like pulling a JD, I'm going to be really mad.
Oh, I'm going to have to use that. That'd be awesome.
It might have actually been a bit of a caffeine meltdown like you warned me about having. I mean...
Oh, I was hoping so hard for that.
I chugged an energy drink like in the morning and then I took a caffeine mint. So I probably had like 250 milligrams of caffeine in my body already at 9 a.m. So maybe that was just too much.
I was on a podcast the other day and I made a comment about this. To me was like one of the most melodramatic pro tours I've ever seen. Like supposedly LSV yelled at Bertoncini. Supposedly somebody was DQ'd for throwing cards. And I know that guy actually. Three pros that I know of proposed to their girlfriends. The uproar over Ari Lax winning, like so much drama. And I've never seen that. It was like the real world. It was crazy.
There was even another DQ too. One of my teammates got cheated against in like round 7 or something, and called a judge, and the guy ended up getting DQ'd. What happened was his opponent had a Savage Knuckleblade on the field, mm-hmm. and goes to fetch, and Miguel, my teammate, in response plays Jeskai Charm to put it on top of your deck. The idea being it goes to the top, and then you know you shuffle, and you're not going to redraw it again instantly. Mm-hmm. The deck was shuffled. So the card goes to the top, and he just doesn't shuffle his library and doesn't resolve the fetch.
Mm.
So calls a judge, and they end up deciding that he did it intentionally so that he could draw the Knuckleblade again, and they DQ'd him for cheating.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's like a 400-player field, I think a little less than, and 2 DQs is actually like a really high number.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I was just amazed at some of the Twitter updates that I was reading about where, you know, it had all the makings of like a soap opera, like marriages and fighting and DQs. It was crazy.
Yeah, for sure. It was really exciting to be at least. There was like always a lot of stories going on, a lot of...
Yeah. I kept waiting for you to have like your Jesse Spano meltdown where like, you know, you'd be doing your deck tech and Brian David Marshall would be talking to you and Jadine Clomperens is here. And then you're just like, I'm so excited. You just lose it on screen. Like that was waiting so hard for that. I was like, please, please. And it didn't happen. So
sorry, Aaron. Maybe in DC. Hope I qualify.
I can hope. So I put out the call for some questions from my listeners to try to find out some more about you. So we're going to go ahead and go through those. So at VoxPVOXD wants to know, if you could unban any one card from Modern or Legacy, what would it be and why?
I don't play a ton of Modern, and I play very little Legacy. But
didn't you top 8 a Legacy Open?
Well, you're not wrong. That was like my 4th Legacy tournament ever. I was very surprised to top 8. Sometimes you like pour your heart and soul into one format of Magic, and the, you know, ancillary benefits and other formats are just enough to top 2, actually. I kind of believe that.
Like you do.
just pretty casually, right? No biggie. Yeah, that was DC. A good tournament. So what would I unban Modern? Probably some Sweet Blue card. Mm-hmm. Jace, maybe? Would that be fun if Jace was unbanned in Modern? I don't think people would like that. Let's do that.
You know, it's funny. I hear a lot of people say that he could be unbanned right now and that it probably wouldn't be a big deal. So I'd be okay with that. But I'm a Jund girl, so if it were me, I'd want Bloodbraid Elf. But
I forgot Bloodbraid Elf was banned. That's actually the first tournament I ever top 4'd was SCG Open before the Open Series. It was just the Star City Games 5K, one of the first ones in Philadelphia with the Zendikar Alara standard Jun deck. It was amazing. It was like release day of the tournament. We just happened to cross the deck, and it was so unbelievable. It was like the only thing you could actually lose to that day was the mirror. And nobody was playing the deck. It was the easiest top four of my life.
And what would you unban in Legacy?
What's banned in Legacy? Just the Vintage Restricted list? Ancestral Recall, for sure. Let's just draw three cards. Sounds fun.
At Drake and Talcos wants to know, what was the favorite part, your favorite part about going to Honolulu?
I liked the isolation in Honolulu. Like, it's 6 hours apart, so you don't feel this pressure to keep up with all your friends or whatever. They know you're off playing Magic on Hawaii and the time zones aren't matching up, so you get to really just focus on the game.
I would imagine it's beautiful, too. Like, did you do any sightseeing?
They were, like, palm trees. I'm not much of a tourist.
Oh, man. See, I'm a ginger, so I would probably just stay in my room with the curtains closed and hiss at the sunlight, but that's just me. So.
I did actually really enjoy getting to wear, like, flip-flops and shorts. That was pretty sweet, and, you know, yeah. It was awesome.
But you still looked nice in your feature match picture, though.
I loved that feature match feature, that picture. Like, the Pro Tour photographer just, like, does magic. That was an awesome picture.
Yeah, I was a little jealous of, I know when we were at the Community Cup, and I kept watching all the videos, and I swear they kept getting me from, like, the worst angles. I was like, you know, could we maybe get some dimmer lighting or something that makes me not look like Phyllis Diller? Like, I'd really appreciate it. And...
Well, if you ever want to see, oh, I think I showed you that once, my GP Chicago top eight picture. The worst thing in the entire world.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who determines how well I did based on how I looked.
I mean, like, I top eighted Chicago, and, like, I was ready, you know, I top eighted a Grand Prix. I'm ready to be done with Magic, maybe do other things in my life. And then I saw that picture and realized I couldn't go out like this. So.
I could look better, I promise.
Exactly.
At Tim's War, I would like to know, what pro do you just want to punch? All these pros are too damn nice to each other.
Okay, well, I'm not going to say the name, but he knows who he is.
So it's a man. Do we get a hint as to, like, maybe his hometown? Like,
nothing.
A geographic?
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing. Jeez, you're pulling a Janine on me here.
Oh, brutal.
I have a card that I can't even cast. Congratulations.
Oh, God.
Poor Tim. Okay. And our friend Norbert would like to know, how many tuk-tuk grunts is too many? Is this an inside joke?
Yes, okay. I would say. This is from the Penn State Magic Club.
Okay.
When tuk-tuk grunts was, you know, our life and our lifeline, and we named our GPS tuk-tuk so that whenever it talked, we could say tuk-tuk grunts.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer the question, in Limited, you have to play with a minimum 40-card deck, and you should almost never exceed that unless you can play more than 40 tuk-tuk grunts by doing so. So, as many as you have.
Interesting. You know my friend Jen, she names her baby tuk-tuk.
Really?
That's
awesome.
Well, her son's name is Max, but when he was in her belly, you know, a lot of times people would get very like, oh, how's the baby? What does baby think about all this? And she got tired of it just being called baby, so she called it tuk-tuk. So whenever she would get a craving, she'd be like, oh, tuk-tuk wants olives. Or whenever the baby would kick, she'd be like, oh, tuk-tuk is kicking. And that just sort of became her way of describing the baby that wasn't like, oh, baby, and all cutesy. It was tuk-tuk. And she literally, I think she's bought him, like, he has the art, like, he's got tuk-tuk art, and yeah, they're all in on the tuk-tuk plan.
That's really awesome, and I think one of the great things about Magic that it can just do crazy awesome things like that for no particular reason.
Yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but there's a gentleman who goes by the name of the Booze Cube. He made the Booze Cube. He just recently had a baby girl named Alexandra. She was 41 hours old, and he registered her for a DCI number.
Well, you can't start them too soon.
I think it's fantastic. You know, I'm all for it.
Yeah, that's a great story to tell at tournaments, you know. I've had my DCI number since I was 41 hours old. Do you even have a social security number when you're that young?
Yeah. I just keep expecting there to be, like, you know, I'm thinking of, like, all this baby gear that you could do. Like, you could do, like, magic mobiles or, like, you know, magic cards laminated hanging from the crib or, you know, things like that. I think that'd be awesome.
Someday.
I keep telling her, you know, because Jenna's trying to get her. She's already bought Tuk Tuk boxes. Like, he has boxes of sealed product.
Awesome.
And he's not even. He just turned a year. I was like, what are you gonna do if he grows up and he doesn't even want to play Magic? That's gonna be like her equivalent of like he's gonna come out of the closet and decide he doesn't like playing Magic, and she's gonna be furious, and not because he's gay, but because he doesn't want to play Magic.
Yeah, I mean. One of these things is much more unacceptable than the other.
Like, he's probably going to get kicked out of the house because he's staying on his friend's couch, and they'd be like, hey, you know, Max, what happened? You know, is this because you're gay? No, it's because I don't like Magic. Oh, man. What was that?
Nothing. Okay.
So if anybody has enjoyed listening to you on the show, Jadine, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
I would love it if they found me at The Quiet Fish on Twitter, because I measure my self-worth is directly correlated to the number of Twitter followers I have. So,
was that a jab at me, Missy?
No.
I mean, I only have 1,800.
You're slacking, Aaron.
I know. I had 15 more, but I have this weird fascination with like going through my followers list and trying to determine who's a bot. And if I determine that they're a bot, or if I even suspect that they are, I will block them. And I don't want that in my followers. So I have a habit of just pruning my followers obsessively.
Question on your opinion on this then. There is a large, I would say, subset of my follow base that is people in the Jadine fandom, which would be the Australian pop singer James Reid and Nadine Lustre. That's their relationship name. Like, should I be unfollowing? Should I make these people stop following me? Or do I just take what I can get? Just search Twitter and follow anything named Jadine and then laugh about it.
You do what you need to do. You know, you've reached the point where I'm comfortable enough to identify you as Jadine fucking Clumparon. So if you want to do that, by golly, you do it.
Okay.
So you are on Twitter at The Quiet Fish. You write for some websites, don't you?
I have written 2 articles for Star City Games thus far.
Okay.
Both of which were following reasonable tournament appearances by me. I write the occasional article for my local team web store, Perfect Storm. So I think I've written 1 article there so far. There might be some more going up.
And what is their website?
PerfectStormMTG.com.
Okay.
So yeah, I've written some things. Hopefully I'll write some more in the future, and I'll probably tweet them all. So if you're following me on Twitter, you'll see.
Not like last time where you were like, I'm too busy testing for the Pro Tour. Ugh.
I mean, I tweeted that it was there. I just kind of assumed people knew where to find Star City Games, but I guess that was just too much of an assumption for Aaron Campbell at StarCityGames.com.
And then I, of course, plugged it, and it got tons of retweets and favorites. So
I know, and then I felt so bad being a diva because you helped me so much.
I carried you.
You sure did.
What is that scene from Romeo and Michelle where it's like, that I'm the Mary and you're the Rhoda?
I've not seen it.
You've not seen Romeo and Michelle?
No, I haven't heard of it.
What?
Yeah.
How do you sleep at night?
I mean, pretty well most of the time.
With all your Pro Tour money?
I mean, yeah, it's pretty much my mattress at this point.
And so what events are on the schedule for you? Like, where can people see you?
I will be in Boston next weekend. The weekend after that, I will either be at Eternal Weekend or the TCG Player 50K. I have not quite decided.
Okay.
After that, I will be in Grand Prix New Jersey. I went and got my enhanced driver's license today, so I will be in Grand Prix Ottawa in Canada.
Oh, wow.
That's about as far ahead as I planned. So
you're going to be in Jersey?
Say that again?
Joyzy?
Oh, yeah. I'll be in Joyzy. battling some legacy, seeing if I have to play these freaking treasure cruises in this format now.
I love that. I get a feeling you're going to do well at that GP.
I hope so. That'd be awesome. That's one of the few GPs that actually qualifies me for DC, so that'd be a good one to do well in.
Yeah, the next GP I have, I'm pretty much grounded for the rest of the year because I'm on a vacation time. So the first one I have coming up is Omaha in January, so I'm excited about that. So once this month is over with, this is like the month of standard for me, then I go right back to modern and practicing modern and getting good at modern. And I actually have like a good deck now, so now it's just a matter of being good at it. And
gotcha. That's cool. I have not played much modern in my entire life. I played one. The split format 50K I played modern, and then some local events. So as soon as I actually have to play, I'll have to pick up that format and play something.
Do you just not enjoy it, or?
I mean, I play Magic for tournaments, and there just haven't been tournaments for modern that I've needed to play.
Well, if you have the time, you should hit up one of the modern IQs on Sundays now that SCG is offering them.
Yeah, but they're like half the prize support and no camera time. And I
Oh man, well, it has been so much fun having you on the show, Jadine. Thank you so much for coming on, and
you're
I look
welcome.
Forward to all of your success and following you along the way.
Thank you, Erin. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and if anybody's enjoyed what they've heard here on the Deck to Use, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at the Deck Tees. You can keep up with me on Twitter at Original Estrus, and you can also email the show at thedecktees@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves. Okay, bye.